1, 2, 3, 4.
Attention musicians, wouldn't you like to hear your music on vinyl, even if it was just one copy of one of your favorite albums that never came out on vinyl? Well, you can do it, and our friends at Austin Signal can help you. Austin Signal is a high-quality recording studio and vinyl cutting facility located just 15 minutes outside of Austin. In addition to traditional modern recording services, the studio also specializes in some very unique offerings, including short-run vinyl production, single mic recording, and direct-to-disc recording. Gang, I've done it, and it sounds great. Just go to austinsignal.com, click on the How Did I Get Here on their menu, or follow the link in the text of this podcast. When you get there, enter promo code HDIGH for 10% off vinyl cutting. That's right, 10% off with the promo code HDIGH. Today's featured vinyl cut from Austin Signal is from Austin artist Big Cedar Fever from their Single Mic Series EP Cut at Austin Signal. Let's get down.
I left Corina far across the sea. I left Corina far across the sea. She didn't write me no letter. She didn't care for me. Goodbye, Corina. This is where they will.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talked.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a great week, whatever it is you did this week. Gang, I've had a good week. It's been a busy week, a lot of podcasts, gigs, rehearsals, all kinds of stuff going on. It's crazy. I would like to take a second, though, to welcome any new listeners that are coming because of our guest today. Maybe you don't know the show, and maybe you know our guests, the amazing singer-songwriter Stephen Kellogg from Connecticut. Yeah, we have a Skype conversation. It's absolutely fantastic, but I do want to welcome you listeners. My name is Johnny Gowdy. I'm the host of this show. I'm also a musician. I've been doing this for a very long time. I've been doing the show for a long time. I've been being a musician for a very long time since I was a teenager, and I talk to other musicians on this show, and obviously this is episode 841, so I have a lot of these shows. You can go back and find more conversations with great musicians, great artists, by going to howdidigethere.podbean.com. All right, you go down there, you go on the right-hand column, you'll see a bunch of months with years next to them. That's all the years I've been doing this. I started in 2011, still doing it. I put out two shows a week. And it's me talking to other great musicians. I've had an array of amazing guests, all kinds of musicians, producers, sidemen, frontmen, songwriters, film people, authors, all kinds of stuff, but mostly music people. Some people, if you're familiar with Stephen Kellogg's music, that play Americana music and tour around a lot, you might know Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket. He's been on a couple of times. Ray Wiley Hubbard was just on. Gerf Morlix, the amazing producer and artist, was on. Alejandro Escovedo has been on. Bob Schneider has been on a couple of times. Ian McLaughlin from The Faces and The Rolling Stones was on when he was alive. And Steve Poltz has been on a couple of times. Rosie Flores, Americana artist Jesse Dayton, Ben Dickey, so many different people. So welcome to the show. This is How Did I Get Here, where I, Johnny Gowdy, musician, talk to other musicians. And today is no different. I'll be talking to the amazing artist Stephen Kellogg, once again from Connecticut. Yeah, a lot of the people are from Austin, but I do talk to people from all over the world. That's all I'll say about the show. All right, gang, if you live in Austin, I want to give you guys a heads up about a show coming up next Tuesday, all right? Next Tuesday is Ham Day. That's the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians. And one day out of the year, they really go balls out to raise money. And they have people playing music all over town all day from 7 in the morning at Whole Foods until 2 in the morning at all of the clubs, all right? People raising money for the thing. You go different places and you walk in. For instance, on Tuesday, September 24th, I will be playing at IBC Bank downtown, 500 West 5th Street. I'll be playing at 1 p.m. At 11 a.m., Kalu James, the amazing Callu James will be playing, the amazing Akita Adderley at noon, and at 1 p.m., I will take the stage solo acoustic and play in a bank lobby. Why? Because we have a health alliance for Austin musicians here, and we need to keep it going. So, yeah, I'm doing that. If you want to find out more about the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians, go to myham.org. That's myhaam.org. All right? All right. As I said, today I've got a great guest on the show, Stephen Kellogg, singer-songwriter from Connecticut. He will be playing in Austin next Friday, September 27th, with Will Hoag at the Cactus Cafe. Go to stephenkellogg.com. For all of your Stephen Kellogg needs. Now, I have to thank the gentleman that connected us, this guy Jim Eggers on Twitter. He sent an email like, hey, you know, he'd be good on, he's done it before. He's like, hey, you know, you should be on Johnny's podcast, Stephen. And so I wrote, yeah, man, do it. And then I heard from his lovely manager, Dale, and now we are here, and we did this podcast via Skype. He was in Connecticut, I was here, and we have a fantastic conversation. Turns out, we really did have a great conversation. We just literally got to know each other on the podcast. Never met the dude before. Been listening to his music. His latest album, Objects in the Mirror, is available now wherever you stream and download your jams. He's also got tons and tons of other music. He is on the road from now until the rest of the year. He's doing a tour with Will Hoag right now as we speak. So go find him at stephenkellogg.com. Look at his tour dates. And if you want to find out more about the Cactus Show, because he is coming to Austin next Friday, September 27th. You might want to get out there and see him. Anyway, without further ado, this is my conversation with a really, really fascinating man. He's a family man. He's got kids, got like four kids, and he's done the whole major label thing. And then he brought it all back in, brought his industry into his own control. Now he runs the whole show. He's got a manager, he's got a booking agent, but he did, he took over the rest of the stuff. And you got to do that now. And we have a great conversation about that, about how he's adapted to the changes in this industry to keep him and his family afloat. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with this amazingly fascinating and extremely cool dude, singer-songwriter Stephen Kellogg. Let's get down.
I could see you looking down small houses. They were built into the ground at a distance. You can't see what's falling down if you're up close.
You're actually coming here next Friday.
Yep.
On the 27th, you're playing the Cactus.
Yeah.
How do you say that guy's name? A Will Hoag?
Hoag.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Hoag.
All right. You guys, yeah. Do you guys play together or do you just trade sets?
The format's going to be that we will go back and forth. You know, I actually came up with this idea that we put in a hat a whole bunch of categories like, you know, deep cut, audience request, rock song, family song, and then you just pick it out, and then we'll each play a song from that category and then go to the next one, and just so it'll be every night will be totally different, which I'm really psyched about.
That's awesome, man. You seem to do things in a really, really creative way. This book that you made for Objects in the Mirror, I didn't get the actual physical book, but I was sent a you know, where you can read it on the computer, but it's gorgeous, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you very much. It's the one with kind of the lyrics and the program guide or whatever. Is that what you got? Or
yes, it has like the song facts and like
yeah. Man, I know it's tricky to get people to understand what it is. It sits on the merchandise tables, and I think people don't always realize what it is. But it's so when someone gets it, it's just such more of an experience with the record, you know, when you have it and you're holding it and I feel like that's going to be sort of the wave of the future for people that still crave that interaction, you know, and maybe don't want to deal with vinyl or whatever, you know.
Right, right. And it's interesting because you've been doing this a while. You've been putting out music since the early 90s?
Yeah, I mean, I was in college then, but okay. I was in college in the 90s, but yeah, I'm definitely two decades in anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've seen the shift change. Like where your money comes from, right? So that's probably why you're always on tour. And like, you know what I mean? I mean, you got to stay, and it's very clear you have a lot of mouths to feed as well.
Yeah.
You have a pretty big family.
I joke about this a lot, but I sort of, what I signed up for, what I thought I was getting into.
All of us,
You're like, wait a minute, wait, hold on. I got signed to Universal. Like, this is supposed to be the dream. And I feel like our record was one of the first ones to come out with a, like, no piracy, big warnings all over it. Like, they were trying to figure out how to stop losing money. And I'm like, my album finally comes out on a major label, and it looks like just it's the most unappealing thing a fan could ever get. Like, just,
what year was that?
2005.
Oh, okay. So you got in even after it started getting real weird.
Yeah, it was sort of the end of the older era.
Right.
And I was playing, you know, the last time I had another job was, I guess, 2001. So I had been in it for a while, but it felt like, whoa, we finally like did one of those things that you know, we were validated and we were like, we're right here, I'm ready to be in the business. And then it was like, and now the business works like this, you know? Very different.
I was in a band that got signed to a subsidiary of Elektra that was owned by Lars Ulrich in like 1998. And our record came out the Tuesday after the Friday that he delivered the whole names to Napster when he showed up with all those boxes. There was this thing back then where that's all you wanted and it's just all you craved. You didn't want to be your own industry. You know what I mean? With like a family store on your website, you wanted to have some guy out there selling your stuff and you could go and play your shows and live the dream. But when you got into that thing, probably same thing as me, look around and you're like, man, this sucks.
Yeah, this doesn't work. Yeah. This show doesn't work. And I mean, the family store was kind of, it came as a result of just finally, I mean, I resisted full-on acceptance of the industry really about 2 years ago. I was like, all right, I can keep railing against the rising tides of all the things that exist.
Right.
Or we just got to play the ball where it's lying right now. And that's really what I was like, all right, we need to figure out how we can stay in the business and figure out how to. And so part of it was going smaller, like taking over our online thing became such a, all right, I'm going to be the one packing your package. And if that appeals to you, then like, and it did apparently, because we have a lot more, we sell a lot more online and we have much more interaction with our listeners now than we did 2 years ago. And part of that's just being like, yeah, guys, I'm a small business. And if you want me to like be around, like let's all do this together. And it's made for a good couple of years, but you had to sort of completely accept that like, there's no time to be cool. This is our livelihood. Let's just figure this out, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, you're an amazing songwriter. Like,
Thank you.
I've been listening to your stuff because we were supposed to do this a couple of times and things like you had some stuff, then I had some stuff. Now we're sitting down. I got to thank this guy on Twitter who I don't even really know, but some guy named Jim Eggers was like, hey, you should interview this guy, Stephen Kellogg. And I was like, okay, hey, you want to be on my podcast? And here
That's
we are.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that too. Yeah. I don't know Jim either, but I've read his tweets before and I'm always like, hey, thanks for being enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. I'm glad I put us together, man. That's great.
Yeah. So thank you, Jim, out there. Hopefully he listens to it. He's not just a guy tweeting stuff because there are those kind of people too.
Okay. All right.
But he doesn't seem like it.
No, I think he'll tune in. You better, Jim.
Yeah.
Let us know you listened, bro. This is the test.
Yeah. So, hey, man, who produced this record, Objects in the Mirror?
So this is produced by Will Hogue,
okay,
who I'm about to be doing a run with.
Right.
Will produced it, and then Eric Donnelly, who plays in my band, and myself were kind of the co-producers on it. And really, we have three extremely different personalities working together on this record to, and that was, I think, what, you know, this is a record I'm happy to be out supporting right now. And I think it largely is because we had these three personalities, each sort of offsetting, you know, each other in a good way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes that makes for the best, the best records. Going through it, like this one to me sounds, it seems like on this record, you captured all of the organic stuff that you would get from like a live record and enough of like the studio production and polish, for lack of a better word, where they kind of have met in this amazing place where it's like an amazing sounding record, great production, and it's still extremely organic sounding and feeling. Did you guys like track that stuff live together?
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That was definitely the goal.
Yeah, I'm not here either to blow a bunch of smoke up your ass. I really do like your stuff. So,
no, I appreciate that. And really, as artists, I don't think you can ever hear it enough. You hear reverse all the time, so it's very nice to like keep. We got to keep, you know. But we did record it live. We made the record fast. I mean, we did this in 4 days with a mix of a couple of my touring guys and then a couple of really gifted Nashville guys. You know, the drummer Chris Powell is out with Brandy Carlisle now, but he's played with everybody. And I heard him on the Laurie McKenna record, tracked him down, showed up outside his bus. I mean, it's when I look back on the brass of how I got Chris's attention to do this record, it was really, it was pretty bold. But you know, I had a friend of a friend who said, you know, there's a guy here to talk to you, and I feel like, you know, having great musicians in the mix really allowed us to do. So we made it in 4 days, and we did the vocals live. We did it all live.
Good. It feels like that.
Yeah. I just, you know, I've made records that felt overproduced, and I did it. I don't regret it, but I was usually doing it because at the time I was on labels and they were like, we got to get something that's going to work on the radio. The problem is when it doesn't work, you're left with recordings that aren't, that's not really where my heart is. You know, you're you kind of took a swing and you struck out and now you just struck out. Whereas this record, I was independent and I just thought, I want to make one that sounds like the albums that I like to listen to. And that tends to be, you know, 70s songwriter stuff, Bob Seger and early Rod Stewart and stuff. That's like kind of my happy place musically. Yeah. So we were aiming at that with this, and I wanted to have it feel live and just not, you know, and I said, and we just weren't really worried about the commerciality of this particular album. So,
and it's done well.
And it's done better than the last many records that I put out. So, you know, go figure. I wish I had always done. I mean, if we could all just, it's much easier to be yourself than to try to be something you're not. But I've not always been able to nail that balance, you know.
Yeah, so. that's interesting because I do get the vibe of a fully formed artist. You know what I mean? Like on all levels, you seem to have all of your, you seem to be completely together. In a way that, like, as a musician myself, seeing your thing and going like, man, this guy's got his fucking shit together. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Like,
yeah.
I had to talk to this
guy.
Yeah,
well, I know. You should see me raise my kids. That's where it's like I finally figured this thing out. And meanwhile, I'm trying to raise my kids. And I'm like, I am not your servant. You got, like, I mean, who I end up being on a daily basis is not. I wake up like, today I'm going to be the best dad ever. And by, like, 10 o'clock, I'm in the weeds, just like, you guys are driving me crazy, you know, but so.
It seems like it would be, it's like too much humility. I saw like the pictures there in the studio with you and stuff. And it's like, you know, you're in your magic space. And all I could imagine was like kids going, dad, come on, be quiet. You're driving us crazy. Do they like your stuff?
They do. And having them around really, it kept reminding me, like, this isn't brain surgery that we're doing here. Like, no one gets hurt if we have a bad day in the studio. We lose money. It's no fun, but no one gets hurt, you know, and having them around was a great reminder of that. They're super cool kids and they do great as kids go. But one of the funnier things in the studio was I thought, all right, I want to get you guys on this record. So we had them do hand claps on this song, Symphony of Joy. And my then five-year-old, not surprisingly, she just wasn't clapping in time at all. And, you know, and the engineer was like, he's like, playing it back. And he's like, oh, this is great and everything. And I'm starting to get kind of annoyed, like, Greta, seriously? You can't clap in time? Like, you know, it's just... You know, everybody's in the studio just enjoying, you know, that we're with, like, Kelly's with his family, and I'm in there, like, being like, really, you're going to mess with my record, guys? Like, yeah, like, thank you, that's good for nothing.
Out of nowhere, you become Murray Wilson. Sorry, that's a terrible comparison.
Who is that? What's that reference?
That's the father of Dennis and Carl and Brian Wilson.
Okay.
From the Beach Boys.
All right. He was not cool.
No, he wasn't a nice man.
Okay.
So were you born and raised in Connecticut?
I was born in Pennsylvania, but raised in Connecticut, in New England, bunch of different towns, and very much. I met my wife in high school, and you know, I went to college in Massachusetts, and we were like, let's just get out of Connecticut. It's a cultural void.
Right.
And then I started my career and everything, and then we started raising kids, and we're like, you know, it'd be awesome. We should go back to Connecticut. Like, you know, it's funny.
It's a total void.
Yeah. So we've been back here 14 years, and I may stay forever. I mean, I love New England for sure.
When did you find music? Like,
I was 10 years old. I found it early. Okay, I found it. You know, my dad would play Cat Stevens records, and I would go to sleep to that stuff. You know, so it was always around. But really, my sister took me to see Whitesnake when I was 10. And when I walked in, Johnny, I just thought, whoa. That it does not get better than that right there, what I'm seeing. And so in a lot of ways it explains kind of what happened with my musical career, because I sort of embraced the entertainment value that all those 80s metal bands had, and then the songwriting values of that 70s stuff. And that's very much, if I analyze it, that's kind of explains what happened with me as a performer and artist, you know.
Yeah, it also explains the headband.
But I love that shit. And somebody, you know, I went to see Chris Stapleton and Hank Williams Jr. one night, and I'm at the concert, and I know this guy meant it as an insult. He's like, "Hey, Bon Jovi," and I'm just like, "Thanks, like, cool. If that's the vibe you're getting, all right, man. That was my second concert ever, you know." So,
you saw Whitesnake, you were like, "This is it. This is what I want to do."
I was, but then keep in mind, I was growing up in the suburbs,
right.
You know,
yeah.
And everybody in the suburbs loves to say, well, what are you really going to do? Or, you know, that's a tough living,
right?
Which I just think is such bullshit. Like, don't lay that trip on kids, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what your musical road was or if you encountered that, but I know it was so useless for me. Like, just to, all it did was just get me out of the thinking. I mean, for years, I always knew what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
The night I met my girl, my now wife, I said, I want to be a rock and roll singer when I grew up. I knew this. And yet there I was at 25, not doing it and wondering. And as a result, you just think it's not possible. And really, it's anything's possible. You just got to work your ass off. I mean, that's it. Just do what you want to do and go after it with your whole being, you know? And so I knew in my bones that that's where I wanted to go that night, but it took me so many years, I would say well into my 30s, before I finally realized, this is what I'm doing. Like, this is my life's work. I'm going to be an artist. But I just kept thinking, like, well, let me see if I can keep it going another month before the bottom falls out. You know, even when we were kicking ass and on TV and all this stuff, I just thought, they'll find out soon I'm a fake, you know, and that I don't really belong here. I'm not talented enough or whatever, you know. And I think that that's just stupid thinking, and I wish I hadn't internalized it to the degree that I did, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you went to college, what did you go for?
I went for communication. I didn't even know if I was going to bring my guitar. I was, you know, but I quickly got there, and I'm having all these feelings, and I took the guitar out of the closet and started writing songs. And then that's how you end up meeting people. Mm-hmm. And then I started selling this demo tape door to door at college for $5. And you go, wait a minute, if I sell 20 of these, I got $100.
Yeah.
So this is 1995, and $100 just by selling your tape mm-hmm. and making your in like sh- I mean, I'm like, this is a way better way to make money than anything else I could be doing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. What was your experience? How did you get into music? What's your story?
Well, I mean, mine is a little different. Like, my mom was like a cool rock chick, and she and my dad divorced when I was young. And I grew up around real professional musicians. So to me, it wasn't a weird thing. And I mean, I wanted to be a rock star and go all the way and do the whole thing. But it also, like, being the guitar player in a band was an actual way of life for people that I knew.
I knew the reality of it. Did you grow up in Austin?
I lived in Austin a little bit when I was a teenager. And then my mom died. And then I moved to Miami and lived with my dad, who was a guy that, like, hey, what are you doing? Like, you can't play guitar. You need to go and do this other stuff and be a normal human being. You know what I mean? And I just I had grown up with where nothing was weird. You know what I mean? Like, a mm-hmm. banker wasn't weird. A lawyer wasn't weird. A doctor wasn't weird. And then a bass player in a band wasn't weird.
Yeah.
Or a guy that paints stuff and sells it at art festivals wasn't weird at all. You know?
I mean, that's a gift, because you then believe in... You believe in the possibility of, you kind of think, well, what's my vocation supposed to be or whatever. I mean, I would like to impart similar. That's what I'm working to impart to my kids too.
Like, yeah.
You don't have to do this. This job is no more noble than anything else, but believe that, you know, pay attention to what fires you up, you know, and try to find that. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, believe me, there were even people inside that discouraged me. There's a funny story from my life. My mom had these friends that owned this club in Spring, Texas, like outside of Houston. They had all these singer-songwriters. Like, they would have, like, it's like where Lyle Lovett, you know, started out playing in like the early 80s and stuff like that.
Sure.
Blaze Foley, all these cats. Why am I drawing a blank on his name? Oh my God!
Who?
What's the guy in the Blaze Foley's best friend? The
not
skinny guy.
That's not like Robert Earl Keen.
No.
I want to see. I haven't
Towns
seen
Towns Van Zandt. Thank you.
Towns Van Zandt. Okay,
Towns Van Zandt. So,
gotcha. Okay.
We went to go see Towns Van Zandt, and obviously, I was like 14, but I wasn't like shielded from anything. It was like, hey, we're all going to this person's house, and Towns is going there, and you know, people were hanging out, drinking, smoking weed, and Towns was definitely drunk, and I was like loaded with questions. And anytime I met someone that was doing this, you know, for real, I would be like, I got to ask you this stuff. How do I do this? What do I need to do? And a very drunken Towns Van Zandt like was talking to me, and sort of like physically I was moving into a corner, and he was like, you can't do this. You're going to end up being poor and fucking sucked. I just like really horrible thing, to where my mom had to come up to him and be like, hey, babe, like, he's just a kid. He's got dreams. Like, leave him alone. But I did hear a lot of the negative side, but like there were a lot of people that were like, you know, hey, you know, you can do this. Like one of my mom's very close friends when I was growing up was Eliza Gilkison. And so that was like someone, you know, someone that's out there doing it still to this day.
Yeah.
You know, out there taking her guitar, throwing it in the car, driving to another city and playing for people, whoever shows up.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's so cool that you had that array, and that's the whole thing. Like, we were aware of our household names, and we're aware of this whole starving artist thing that kicks around.
Right.
But there's this huge middle class that involves all different kinds of possibilities, you know, from, and it's really, what do you envision for yourself? What do you want for yourself? What's important? What's working? You know, or is it your I got friends that stay home and just cut songs for TV all day long, and they make 10 times the money I do, and they don't travel, and they love it.
Yeah.
But I'd like the money, but I don't, I love playing shows more than I love, writing songs to pitch or something like that. You know, they're different muscles, and luckily there's plenty of room for everybody. It's kind of like, what are you good at? What works for you, And I watched out for, that experience you had with Towns. I guard my children from those a lot. Like when I meet people who are small-minded or teachers that kind of think there's one way, I'm like, you don't know. If I've learned one thing in this business, there are so many different ways to reach an end, And anybody that tells you that this is the way things are done is, talking out their ass as far as I'm concerned. So, right. I try to just – that's cool. That's cool. That's a cool story, and it's cool that you – it's interesting you had those questions, and then here you are, this podcast host, to kind of curating conversations. You were destined to go where you were going too,
Yeah, I felt that way. I never really questioned – I mean, there are times, don't get me wrong, like the show's called How Did I Get Here, which is like both like a thing that you say in celebration, and it's also a thing that you say while you're crying in your room in the dark.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why did I do this? And there are plenty of days, that I was like, shit, man, my grandfather was a great doctor, and he's got all these other family that are doctors. But those guys, like they come to my shows, and they're, they're like, man, this is a lot better than delivering babies all day or something. You know what I mean?
I mean, we used to play this game in the van where we would talk about like, all right, the fact that we got to do fill in the blank, what's that worth? That's like we put a cash value so that we could like even the score with all our rich friends who were making stupid money doing things, And we're like, all right, yeah, that's got to, getting to show up at a dinner party and have usually the most interesting job, like that's got to be worth 20 grand a year. Like we just put all these like quantitative, to just give ourselves like a, a boost when we were feeling a little low about our choices in life.
Right. And there's also a thing like I played a show like 6 months ago, and I'm 50. And there was there was this guy.
You look good for 50, man. You're drinking from the fountain of youth.
Thank you. This is a horribly self-aggrandizing story now. But
okay, hit me.
This dude comes up and he's like, man, I don't know how you guys do it, man. When you get to my age, man, I don't know if you're going to be able to be able to be doing this. Like, what are you going to do? And I was like, how old are you? And he goes, 42. And I was like, okay.
All right, Chris.
But there's something about you have it too. Like, I mean, you've been, you're not that far behind me that you also look young, and there's a youthfulness to you, and there's something sprightly about musicians, older musicians. Like you see McCartney, that guy jogs onto the stage. He's 1,000 years old.
Oh, absolutely. And I thought that this week, with Eddie Money passing and Rick Ocasek, and like, these guys didn't live as long as, 70 is young. It's younger than the life expectancy.
Seems young now, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of musicians don't quite make it as long, but they also, there's so much life in the life of a musician, and I'm addicted to that. I love that. I don't want to name names, but I did a festival earlier this summer. We did some rounds, and one of the songwriters was in this person's in the Songwriting Hall of Fame, and they kept critiquing my songs in the round, and it was clear they had no sense that I had done anything
business. Yeah.
And they were impressed, so it was nice. And so I'm doing this little dialogue in my head of my ego is kind of like, do you know what I've done? And I talked to one of my friends about it after, and they said, this person clearly doesn't realize they think you're much, much younger than you are, and you should be flattered. They're kind of they want to take
you under
their
wing,
be responsible for, breaking you, and you're like laughing because I'm about 2,000 shows in here, and 20 years of road, and, we've done a lot of things in our day. So, it's a funny thing when that happens, when someone's kind of like, and you have to really be comfortable with yourself to not let
sort of get offended by it or let you know.
Totally. Just,
all right, cool, man.
Being on the road so long, you obviously like you go out for a little bit and come home, or how do you do it?
Yeah, I switch it up now. In the beginning, I thought, well, this is it. This is the dream. And so we would just go on the road. And it's a little hard for me when I look back at how much I was on the road when my first kids were born. Like, I was really not home much, you know? And at some point, that just started breaking me down. It started hurting my heart to the point where I just couldn't. I can remember our first tour bus ever was 2007, and I'm just getting in the bus, just crying in my bunk every night, staring at pictures of my two kids. Then I have four now, and I'm thinking, I'm not that successful a musician, and I don't feel like much of a success as a parent or, you know, or a husband. I mean, it was just really, right. It was difficult, you know? So fast forward a bunch of years, I would scale it back and I would always ride the burnout. And I kept thinking like, if I don't make it, I'm out of here. You know, you're tempting the universe to give you a clear sign.
Yeah.
But then I kept not making it, but I never went away either. You know, there was always some level of success and some middle class, you know, there would always be wins. It's like going out and golfing and you're blowing up and you're like, this is terrible. And then you get a birdie on a hole and then the next hole you par and you think, I might keep playing. Maybe I'll play one more, you know, and that's kind of been my whole career. It's just like, maybe I'll play one more.
Yeah.
So around a little before, I'm 40, almost 43 now, and a little, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I just thought, what happens if I stop playing this game? And I just accept, no, I'm in. I'm a lifer. Let me make this as good as it can be. Let me make the best art I can be. Let me sit down and focus on how to make enough money to pay all my bills and keep my family living the lifestyle that I'm comfortable with. Like, what has to happen? And part of what had to happen was I had to actually recommit to, I'm like, I got to get back. I got to money. I'm still making most of my income on the road. I just got to suck it up and go out there and I'll explain to my kids, sorry, I can't be with you more. Dad has to work, but I every day I can get home, I'm going to do it. And that really was the beginning of me starting to ramp up again and go, this year I've been on the road a ton again,
a lot.
But it's for good cause. You know, I believe in the work. I believe in the message. I make it known to the people coming to my shows. This isn't a small thing. Like, yeah, you buy tickets, buy a record, buy a t-shirt. I'm not trying to sell you anything. You know what? If this means something to you, pick it up. Cause this is how we're doing it. And because I'm not doing it in a shifty way, it's working. You know, I'm not on a rocket ride. I'm not living Ed Sheeran's reality, but it is working. It's changed the way that my music is perceived and the way I feel on stage, you know, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. You seem to be a really prolific writer. Do you have a regimen? Are you a wake up and write a song guy?
I'm not. But I'm a hard worker and I'm happy to sit down when it's time to work, I do the work. So, once I got this batch of songs for Objects in the Mirror, uh-huh. I'm pretty much only writing if I'm inspired to write, because I've been working on a book that was supposed to come out with with it. So that's the thing. I get up every free moment is filled with that, and I'm getting really close. I'm a year past the deadline of when I told people it would be out.
Yeah,
but I'm now about to close in on. I know this that. Don't even get me going on that. That was so much harder to do. This has been so much harder to do than I ever imagined. And I think once I get that done, then I got a bunch of songs with friends that I want to write, and I get to my stuff when I'm inspired to do so.
Yeah.
And then when I start to get an idea for a record, then I'll sit down and bear down and like, we'll do the work to write the songs. But I kind of let them, what do I want to write about? What do I have to say that I haven't said, you know? And I let that part of my own art kind of ruminate and just come to me a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
The other stuff, I'll be, you know, if this band needs a song and they've asked me to help them and then I can make the time, I'll sit down with them and it's like, let's just do this right now. Let's get into the weeds and see what happens, you know.
So you do a lot of co-writing with people?
I do. For a little minute, I thought maybe I'd become like a Nashville songwriter guy.
Yeah.
But I didn't like leaving
my good line. I didn't like leaving stuff all over town, and I don't have a publishing deal, so I thought, this isn't quite for me. But if there's an artist who I know who wants to write, or if there's a reason
like
to believe
yeah.
that a song will get into the world,
yeah.
I want the songs. My goal in all this is that I have this worldview and I want to share it, you know?
Yeah.
So if we're just writing a song to just kill time, like, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
But if we're writing a song, if Robert Randolph calls me and says, I need this song and I kind of, this I want to write about this, I love to sit down and say, okay, let's do that. You know, let's get you that song. Like, that's exciting to me because I know it has a shot
yeah.
at living in the world. But just writing every day for the sake of writing, hoping something's going to get cut, that's just, I don't think that's quite right for me. I think it's amazing the people that do it. And I hope to, you know, I hope to have some more chances to work with artists in that capacity. But I'm not moving to Nashville. I thought about it. I'm not doing it, you know.
Right. So, well, there's guys like, do you know Bob Schneider? Your manager mentioned
I do. Yeah, Bob's a guy whose career I've monitored all the way along. I feel like we've been sort of walking alongside. We've never actually met, but I am very aware of his music and his ethos and his whole vibe.
Yeah, he writes so much, you know. I mean,
yeah. Is he like a write every day guy? I mean,
yeah.
Is that what he does?
Yeah. He does these songwriting games, and I did this tour a while back where I was in a band that was opening with him. Everyone was playing the game, and you got the text with the title after the show was over, and then after sound check, we would all go in Bob's bus and listen to the songs
that everyone had written.
Yeah,
cool. It's awesome.
Yeah.
There's no way you don't become a greater writer. And honestly, Johnny,
I mean,
I would do something like that if I wasn't like packaging packages for the family store, and booking flights for random tour, and like I'm doing all these different things. But like that, of course, that's going to make you great. And that was part of the acceptance. I was like, I got to give up on some of the art to just do logistical shit all the time, because even with a manager and an agent, it's just a reality of what I have to do to make stuff work, and this is what's working. But it sounds amazing, and I sort of envy the ability, like being able to do that.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I've gone in and out of doing that. It's not like I'm a guy that like wakes up every morning and shows up with a song by lunch. But
right.
I appreciate that. Whenever I do, I feel like shit, I should be doing this all the time.
Yeah,
but then
Well, you get all these extra songs, then you have them, and
yeah.
it's shocking how often they're good.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there's a stinker, but I mean, a lot of times hits are rare and stinkers are kind of rare. But I feel like good songs, man. There's always a use for those things. It's great to just crank them out. Yeah, it's fun.
Do you spend a lot of time like crafting and recrafting lyrics? Because hold on, let me just point this out real fast and kind of get to where I'm talking. Like, a line in the song Prayers, I'm not trying to be a jerk, say your prayers, get off your ass and go to work. Did that just fall out?
That one was kind of sitting there, you know? That one was sitting there, and I kept... I worked on that song for a while because I kept thinking, if I'm going to say this, I need to know that I can back it up.
Right.
Like, it needs to be set up in a way that it doesn't feel, that I don't feel like I'm being heavy-handed when I say this. Like, you know?
Right.
And so the line was sort of sitting there, and it was almost like, can I do this?
Yeah.
Like, is this, I'm sure like a Johnny Cash could do it, but could I do it? Am I okay to do this? And so the verses on that song got worked on, and it, with that one, it was a lot about the pronouns. It wasn't as much, the overall ideas came pretty quick, but then it was like, how do you find a way to keep this conversational and hopefully not feel preachy, you know, and not feel like, you know, and that was the trick on that one. And that's where Eric Donnelly, who I mentioned was one of the co-producers, he would sandblast. On the songs we worked on together, or even on mine,
He'd ask, well, you think that's right? Is this right? What do you think? So we'd finally agree, okay, we got it. And then he'd text me at like midnight, like, I don't know, we might want to use this pronoun instead. And I'd be like, damn it, we made this decision. Then I would think about it for a half hour and be like, you're right, that's better. And we'd, you know, adjust things. And it was kind of, it's cool because in the end, now I get to go play these songs and they feel that much more like we tightened all the bolts on them, you know, and stuff right. like that. So sometimes I haven't always done that. Sometimes I do it. Sometimes songs do. I'm sure like for you too. Sometimes they just kind of fall out pretty well formed and you're just thank the universal flow for hitting you with it, you know? And other times you really labor over them and try to tweak and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have this thing that happens to me now that I'll sit down and try to work on a song. And as I'm doing it, I'm like, how did I do this before? Like, I've done this hundreds of times. How do I do this? Like, you just, all of a sudden you're like, I don't know how to unravel this mystery.
Right, yeah. Well, because it is, there's like a map. There's like a, it's like, what do you want to write about? And how, I mean, that's the thing. When a song is sturdy, it just, it always, it feels right. You just, every line is a landing pad for like, oh, and now I'll say this. And then here's where we go next. And then the, you know, the music does the same thing. And that's when the best songs just feel like they're unfolding like that. You never have to push them up the hill. And right. you don't always know when you first write it because there's a little bit of that new song joy that happens. But you can tell after a while when songs have just had the fat trimmed and they're just – and when you're trying to get there, it can be really tough on your brain can like really – it's just like this almost math or something. And you can't always get – sometimes you just can't quite unlock the puzzle, you know. And or if you're writing with someone – and they're like, what's the big deal? We're good. And you're kind of, you know, it's just, it's you give up on the song or do you keep trying to, I had several on this record that had earlier incarnations and I wanted to believe they were right, but I'd play them out in front of an audience and I'd be like, that didn't kill. Like that wasn't right. And I'd go back, try again and change the music or change words or change the chorus. Or, you know, it's something, man. It is, it's a thing. The songwriting we do, you know.
So you're going to finish this book and it'll come out. Where are you at with your next sort of album?
I don't know. I think, you know, I definitely have a bunch more touring on this record and I'm really focused on sort of releasing the book. And I have a couple of songs that feel real special, that feel like another kind of leap in the direction I was going. And I think those will be the seeds for the next record. But my brain, until I finish the book, it's like, it's just it's taking up all the bandwidth, including my daughter said to me the other day, Dad, do you think you'll ever write another book? And I said, I don't know. She goes, I hope not. It's like, that's what it's doing to my family. This is me being an author.
Is it a memoir?
It's not a memoir. It's a collection of essays about, similar to your podcast, the subtitle of the book is Thoughts on a Perfect Life from an Imperfect Person.
Okay.
And then there's an essay on marriage, there's an essay on friendship, there's an essay on forgiveness, health, sense of humor, integrity. You know, so you've got 12 essays on kind of the stuff I think is the most important stuff in your life. And there's a little bit of memoir in there. There's a little bit of philosophy. You know, there's plenty of humor. I mean, there's some road stories in there for sure. But it's the idea is maybe this can help people in some capacity. And also for the many, many people who I think might be able to get down with what I'm saying but who don't like Americana or who don't like the way I sing, I don't want to be limited by just people that like my music. I want to be able to reach more people than I'm currently reaching. And I thought, let me take a swing at this. And then, you know, then you're in it and you're like, sweet Jesus, this is insane. But, you know, I'm almost through it now. So we'll get it there.
It's funny that you say that. I met a whole lot of people that don't care for my music when I started this podcast. People that'd be like, okay, man, I'm so glad you're doing this. Cause I really, I don't know if you should be doing that music thing.
Well, because they dig your vibe, maybe, but they don't like our music. And that's it sucks. It's a little hard to take, but it's also it's like you start doing something else, and it's I'm getting the same rush from a book that I get from a show. Yeah. So if it even works a little bit and brings some more people to the table, I'm happy with that, you know?
Yeah.
I hope it does. I mean, I hope I don't embarrass myself. I have it's pretty daunting.
I look forward to reading it, man. You seem like a very, very cool dude. Do you know Darden Smith? You know
me
that
too.
Guy?
I know, because in the very beginning of my career, I used to book him. I was booked for a club. After college, my one job I ever had was working for a club between college and doing this. And we used to book him. But I don't know him personally. And I haven't heard his music in a bunch of years. But he in Austin, he's a Texas guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he wrote a book that came out last year. It's just gorgeous and really inspiring. Cool. Kind of a memoir, but just kind of like thoughts.
Let me make a note, because I love reading. This is lots of songwriters who I wasn't familiar with, and now that they've written books, I'm just gonna make a note here. That could be really cool.
I actually listened to it because I'm in a band that we don't travel together. It's kind of how we've been together so long. So yeah. I go do a lot of long drives on my own, and listen to a lot of audiobooks. And I definitely recommend the audiobook because he's got a really soothing voice.
Oh, dude, that's great.
Yeah.
I will definitely get it. And I love Audible. I'm doing The Count of Monte Cristo on Audible right now, which is like 50 hours. But it's so good. I'm 11 hours in. I can't believe they're going to find more things to do in this book because there's 40 hours to go. But it gets me psyched for a long drive by myself because I'm like, oh, this will be great. I'll just, chill out to the – because music can stress me out a little bit now. I mean, I still love it, but it's like my brain is working hard when I listen to music, whereas books are like a calm zone, you know?
Yeah. Man. I'm bummed. I'm not going to be here on Friday when you play here.
Are you gigging? Are you off playing? Or are you just in roster? Yeah.
I was supposed to play that night, but our gig didn't happen. I'm playing the next night, but I'm going to a family reunion in Galveston.
Oh, that's cool.
And then playing in Houston Saturday.
How Texas of you. A Galveston reunion and a Houston. next time around, I'd love to meet you in person. It'd be fun to chat. Well,
you were here like a couple of months ago?
I was. We came through with the band and did 310 over at ACL.
Yeah.
Which was great. You know, a lot of good venues in Austin, good vibes. It was a really great show. And I love the Cactus. I mean, this will be cool. It's Austin's definitely a unique city in Texas, you know?
Yeah. You seem like you would be accepted here among the people.
I have felt accepted. I sometimes, early in my career, I had a harder time feeling like I was part of the gang, and that's true of Austin, LA, and Nashville. It says more about about the way I was. The last couple of years, I've really had a great time in Austin and felt like people were with me. You know, I mean, we could always use a few more fans. It's like I've kind of been drawing 150 people for like 10 straight years, and you sometimes have these unforgettable nights, and you think surely next time this will grow.
Yeah.
And you sell the exact same amount of tickets. So, you know, it plays with your head a little bit, but on the flip side, what a miracle to sell 150 tickets, you know, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So,
I just saw Matthew Sweet Saturday night at 310.
You did?
Yeah.
Was it great? How was the show?
Man, I'm a huge Matthew Sweet fan. And what happened was he had injured his leg somehow.
Okay.
So he was sitting down. And then he admitted that he was coming off the flu.
Okay.
So it was that kind of show. I mean, I know what Matthew Sweet's capable of. And So.
Well, they can't all be winners, but that's it's too bad. It's always a bummer when one gets in your city and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I know. I saw this artist. I was at Americana Fest last weekend in Nashville, and I saw an artist who I adore. But he's got that. He's one of those artists who
will give you the best shows you've ever seen in your life and can also, you know, tank. And it was a good show, but he played way over his set and was kind of battling with the people. And it just, you start to feel uncomfortable and you're like, ah, man, why tonight? You know, I only get to see this person once every couple of years. And here we are listening to them, you know, argue with the sound engineer. And you're just, it's just not the funnest night, but it happens.
Sounds like that guy from, what is it? Why am I? I can't not remember anything today. It's that band. They were friends with the Dandy Warhols, and they have a name like that too. And that guy, I think his name's Antoine or something, and he always gets into a fight with the audience.
Oh God, not Evan Dando.
No.
Okay.
No. Oh yeah, I was going to ask you this. That are you a Jules Shear guy? Do you like Jules Shear?
You know, I don't really know much. I have one song on a playlist of mine that I think is awesome, but I've never I haven't dove deeper. But is that somebody I should check out, you think?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm a huge fan. He did this one record like in the 80s that was produced by Todd Rundgren. And it has like, you know, he wrote All Through the Night, that Cyndi Lauper song. Mm-hmm. And he wrote If She Knew What She Wanted, that Bangles song.
Okay.
And like his versions are on there. I don't know. I'm a big fan of his. Cool. You know, he was the original. Do you remember when MTV Unplugged very first came out and there was a host?
Oh.
And it was just like a couple people and they'd sit around and jam?
Okay.
He was the original host of it.
Oh, that's cool.
I think they only did like four or five episodes like that, but it was badass. It was like Squeeze and he had weird people like Sid Straw. You ever hear her?
No.
She's from up there.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
gosh, it's amazing when you go through people's history. If you sit and ask other artists about their stories, I mean, I'll admit part of why I do this is because I love to keep the company I keep. I love hanging out with super interesting people and hearing their stories and sharing mine, and we laugh and we can relate. And that camaraderie is worth, that shit is gold.
Yeah, that's part of what this podcast started out as. I just didn't want to stay up all night drinking and getting into trouble with dudes. I was like, oh, maybe people can just come over to my apartment. I can have some coffee and we can have these same kind of conversations.
Yeah, do the same thing in the day. Yeah. I mean, that's why I love it. That's why part of why I wrote the book too, because I was like, I got to get some of this down. I got to work it into, you know, I got to work some of this. And originally I thought maybe I'll write a memoir. I talked to an editor and publisher and she said, memoirs don't sell and you're not that well known. Like, what? I think you have another book in you that might be more fulfilling for you to write. And she was right about that. She was very right. I mean, as I started getting in, there was a way to sort of harness these stories, but also do something that doesn't feel like a just completely obscure account of a, you know, middle of the world, you know, songwriter guy on the road, you know. And I've read some really good books about those guys. You know, there's one by a songwriter named David Ford called, I'm forgetting the title, but he's a relatively unknown songwriter. He wrote, his book was so good, I read it right before I started writing mine, and I thought, I don't even know if I should write a book now, because this is, he's already written this thing, it's so good, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I saw some cartoon that said, don't not write a book just because you think it's already been written. I mean, it was literally like the universe just being like, bam.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? So I was like, all right.
I'll get to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about Americana Fest. Like, I have a lot of friends that went there this last year. It hasn't been around that long. It's huge now. Is it like Southwest?
I think for this type of music, it's a bigger deal and it's a better hang, you know, than South. I've had three South Bys and they all resulted in major career things for me. Like, they were all huge. So, but not in the buzzy way you would think they were. Wasn't that we had these packed showcases. It was just like something I needed to have happen clicked. Having said that, at South by Southwest, it could have just as easily been a way to burn thousands of dollars taking the band down there and feeling really bad about trying to load in. I mean, it was only just because it's like cosmically it worked out. Americana is actually it's like every band that I've toured with over the years or want to know, you know, like they're all playing there. You can go see them. You can hang. There's lots of cool stuff like that happening. Plus all the managers, all the agents, all the promoters. I mean, everybody's down there. And it's not this, it's not as overwhelming and as like just on the verge of being completely out of control as South by Southwest is, you know?
Right.
And at this point, South, you know, there's a lot of, you feel like if you're not like a buzz band, like it could be South by Southwest is just daunting. You know, if you're not going to make $10 million, like, are you, is it even worth your time to go to South by? Whereas Americana Fest still feels rooted in, you know, there's still some fans going to just hear music. There's, you can get a lot done there. It's overwhelming for me because I'm thinking, you know, I'd like to, so many people I want to see and you want to make so much of it, but it's a very good thing to go to if this is your world, you know?
Yeah. But so, it seems like it's your world.
Yeah. Had I known, because I went a couple years ago and felt a little outside the party, and had I known, I would have gone for more than the 2 days and I would have like driven in instead of, we flew the whole band in and kind of, but when I got there, I was like, whoa, this is awesome. We should have stayed for the whole thing and really, you know, been around more. But hey,
is there anyone you saw that?
I didn't see as much music as I would have liked to,
yeah.
But I did see an amazing set from Foy Vance. He is a songwriter from the UK who is phenomenal, just phenomenal. And he had a band that was phenomenal, all female band.
Nice.
Female drummer, female bass, female pedal steel, four female backup singers, female keys, and then him being witty, being a great singer, and having the songs to back it up. And it was definitely one of those shows where you're like sitting back. I mean, it was dauntingly great. It was
good.
A really incredible set. So yeah.
It's always nice to get that kind of inspiration.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is. No, I agree 100%. Yeah.
Well, man, it's been really great talking to you, and I'm going to put this out on Friday, so people can see you next Friday, September 27th at the Cactus with Will Hogue, and you're doing some other Texas dates, right? Hold on, I had them up.
No.
Somehow, no, you're not.
No.
Wow, not at all. You're
no.
Going.
This run, it was a little quick and dirty. We wanted to tour together for 5 years, and we had a really small window, so we are just driving around like crazy men, and I think we go right up to Phoenix from Austin.
Yeah, I saw.
Heyo.
Well, that'll be fun, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. But likewise, Johnny, I appreciate you having me on the show, and I enjoyed the chat. And send me your email when we get off this too, so we're in touch and we can just keep in touch. And when I'll hit you up when I'm coming back through.
Yeah, please do.
To Austin, and
yeah.
Should you find yourself in the greater New York area, you know, hit me up.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
We'll have a coffee. It doesn't have to be a smoky beer, late night
no.
Hang, wearing our middle aged bodies down
yeah.
to a pulp. So no, it's cool. Good chatting with you, man.
Yeah, good chatting with you, man. Have a good one.
All right, see you, John.
Bye.
Being young meant everything in the summer.
Stephen Kellogg. See him next Friday here in Austin. Next Friday, September 27th at the Cactus Cafe. If you are not listening in Austin, go to stephenkellogg.com and check out his tour dates. Man, that was a fantastic conversation. What a cool dude. And we exchanged email addresses. So I think this is a budding friendship. This may be a budding friendship, gang. All right. Stephen Kellogg, amazing. Go check out that record, Objects in the Mirror. And there's a book that comes along with it that's gorgeous. And, of course, he's writing another book. He does a lot of writing. Go to stephenkellogg.com for all of your Stephen Kellogg needs. And, gang, don't forget, when you're out there checking out stephenkellogg.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, anywhere. New show every Tuesday, every Friday, me talking to another musician. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for listening. You can go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column, and you'll see dates with months and years. Click on those. Start looking for them, man. There's tons of great, great conversations going on out there. And don't forget to follow our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Okay? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Once again, go to StephenKellogg.com. Check out his album, Objects in the Mirror. Absolutely gorgeous. And don't forget, he will be here in Austin, Texas next Friday, September 27th. He's on tour with Will Hoag at the Cactus Cafe, baby. Let's do it. Here's some more music from Stephen Kellogg. This is that song, Prayers, I was talking about. I love it. All right. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing. Great weekend. Let's get down.
So your life did not work out the way you wanted. Join the club. The success the others flaunted killed off your remaining buzz. Nothing like you thought you'd be. Believe me, I've been there too. When life brings you to your knees and you feel like you can't move, know that this is true. Every unkind thing we say leads to our unhappiness. No one in the world gets by without feeling bad sometimes. And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but say your prayers, get off your ass and get back to work. Who stand for nothing never win much in the end. Just because you don't offend them doesn't mean that they're your friends. You thought logic would prevail, that the facts would tell the tale, but from what I've seen they wear their blind obedience like a veil. Still this rule never fails, that every unkind thing we say only drives the love away. No one in the world gets by without feeling bad sometimes. And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but say your prayers, get off your ass and get back to work. Nothing like a dog fight where everybody thinks they're right, to remind us that a prayer is not an answer, just a light. Even if you're only getting by, start to wonder why you even try. Say the things you need to say, but if the words won't come to you, clear your head and tell the truth. No one in the world gets by without feeling bad sometimes. And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but say your prayers, get off your ass and get back to work. Thank you.